It's time for the Picture House Podcast with your hosts, Sam and Simon. Please ensure that your mobile phone is switched off, refrain from smoking, and keep conversation to a minimum. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show!
Thank you so much for talking to us today, Dan.
No, not at all. Thank you for having me.
We're in the belly of Picture House Central.
Yes.
It's like the, it feels like the engine room sort of powering the cinema.
Yeah, no, it's good. I always like being sort of behind the scenes. Although there's not as many, you don't get to see like as many projection rooms now.
No,
that's
true.
Sad thing. But
we do have projection here somewhere. Two or three 35mm projectors, but not in all of the screens. It's just
I was always just fascinated by that process.
It is a lot of fun. I used to be a projectionist.
Oh really?
That was my first job in cinema in the Ritzy Brixton.
I feel like that's kind of you're going to be one of the last people who are going to be able to say that. So that's pretty cool.
I've got the official badge. I'm the last projectionist at the Ritzy trained in 35mm.
Oh, there you go.
Which was a lot.
That is very cool.
It's good. Sad but good at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, like that's me. That's me. So it's a skill. Also, there was a screening. Did you ever watch the Tarantino movie Django Unchained?
Yeah.
So they released that in 35mm in select cinemas that still had projection. And I was in the Ritzy watching it as a customer, thinking, okay, this is great, I'm loving this film. And then all of a sudden it stopped halfway through. I was like, uh-oh, that shouldn't happen. And then something kicked in, and I went to a member of staff, said, what's going on? And the projector's broken, and no one in the cinema knew how to fix it. So I was like a doctor on an airplane.
Is there a projectionist in the house?
And I rushed up. It was good.
That's pretty fantastic.
It was fantastic.
Segues us very nicely, actually, because... Tarantino was a huge, was like the guy who was one of the people that guided the Daniels through the Sundance Labs when they were making Swiss Army Man. And one of the things he said to them was make sure you, and I actually can't remember if we did this, but he was very, very like big on them shooting on film. So he's clearly like a big film guy.
No, that's cool. I think it's important to kind of keep that alive.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, some people will hopefully. It'll become like cool and fashionable, like Polaroid, and people will be like, oh, it's only, you know, and people will be like, oh, like, you can only like, you know, like people who love the vinyl thing that talk about, like, oh, the crackle. People will be like that about...
See
like,
the grain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So how... You mentioned the Sundance Labs there. How early, you know, did you come on board to this? What sort of state was the project in when you arrived?
I mean, I think I was one of the last people to come on board. It was pretty fully formed by the time it came to me. So Paul Dano was already attached, and I know Paul saw a number of different drafts and was sort of more... was really involved in sort of crafting the character of Hank sort of from an early stage. Mm. I came on board a lot later after I think Paul recommended me for the part. I think I was, like, Paul was the person that sort of put me forward for it. I think based on, well, I'd worked with Paul's very long-term partner, Zoe. On a movie, and then also my girlfriend Erin had worked on Love and Mercy with Paul, so there were all these sort of connections, and I think and Paul and I had sort of passed fleetingly in audition rooms and things, I think he, and then he wrote to me and said, hey, they're gonna send you a crazy script. I think these directors are really, really special. And so that was sort of what I had before. And then I got the script and I saw the log line and I was like, that's crazy and sounds really interesting. And obviously knowing that Paul was already involved, that gave it a certain like, okay, you know, if I know one thing about Paul Dano, he can pick scripts.
Yes.
You know, like he's got a sort of immaculate taste if you know, through his entire career. So that was sort of the precursor I had to it, and then I started reading it, and it was just like, Jesus, this is, you know, the imagination and the creativity kind of exploding off every page was just breathtaking and exciting, and you just go. And also, you know, I'm in the world of doing, like, I do a lot of independent movies, and a lot of... Yeah, and for every one that you end up seeing, there's been three that I've been attached to that never happened because of various complications of the, you know, independent filmmaking. And, you know, when you take on a project like Swiss Army Man, you're like, okay, this is awesome. I wonder if we'll ever actually get to do this.
Yeah.
And so the fact that we did was just, like, felt amazing. And I have to say, like, you know, I feel like the Sundance Labs were... You know, I have not been through them myself and have no... experience of them other than hearing about them through various people, but it does sound like It sounds like they're amazing for anyone, but particularly on this film, it sounds like they were amazing at sort of nurturing it and really like giving the Daniels resources to work and test stuff and play around with ideas.
Do you know how the film sort of evolved during that lab process?
I don't. I mean, I know some like ideas that were at one point in the film that sort of got chucked out, that like involve more weirder stuff happening to my body. Like at one point, I think they were gonna do a thing where like, there's part of me that thinks maybe I shouldn't say this in case they want to use it in another film, but they I feel like they had one idea where like Manny and Hank were falling over a waterfall and Hank like plucked a bee out of the air and stung Manny with it, and Manny had an allergic reaction that meant up he swelled up to the size of a life raft, and then like he uses him on the water again, like there's stuff like that. And I think in the Sundance Labs, I don't know, I guess they just help you sort of refine stuff and you just have access to like the best possible people to ask about, like, hey, how does this, you know, from everything from dialogue to structure and all that stuff to help, because they went through all three labs. So it went through the directing one, the writing one, and the producing one. So they got like, all the people that mentor you through that process sound kind of amazing. So they were just able to pick the brains of, and you know, which speaks to, you know, what a fantastic thing in essence sort of collaboration is, like when you get to feed off other people who have amazing ideas, you know, you make better work, which is, you know, the same thing that happens on any film set ideally. Mm.
It's like watching this film after reading the reviews and seeing the trailer, I was like, okay, how is this going to work? And I was totally blown away by it.
Oh, cool,
kind of like,
you
know, the original vision and how everything was like carried off. When you read that screenplay, were you just thinking, how are you going to do this scene? How are you going to ride my character like a jet ski?
A little bit, yeah, totally. I mean, you do go like, what, how? Yeah, how? Just a lot. And in fact, like, frankly, I would arrive on set a lot of days thinking, how are we going to do this? And the answer is almost always really, really simply. And you know, they're brilliant at finding ways to do a lot of stuff practically or with the least amount of sort of effects stuff there that you're having to imagine at the time. Mm. A lot of the visual effects stuff that we used are, you know, are great effects, but they're not super, super complicated and don't cost tons of money. And actually I feel like we save a lot of money because I believe one of our directors does a lot of the visual effects himself, because
Oh, really?
He can do that. Well, because Dan Kwan has his background is in animation and things, so I think he's you know, I think he takes care of a lot of that stuff. So I did think sort of how when I read the script, but then that's sort of a lovely question to be asking a lot of the time. I mean, there's something really exciting about, and also just then looking at their music videos, you go, okay, these guys do crazy stuff. Like they do it and they pull it off and they make it look amazing. And you know, on the music videos, presumably they were doing it on a budget of no money.
Yes.
And so now that they have some money, not a lot of money. I mean, that's, you know, Swiss Army Man was not an expensive film. But yeah, in terms of how it looks and how it, I also liked what one of the, I think it was Dan Kwan again, said about their use of music, and obviously the soundtrack's amazing, but he said something just about like they use beautiful music to sneak some of their weirder ideas past people. And I feel like that's a great way of describing, like, you know, there are shots in this movie that are just inexplicably beautiful, like inexplicably beautiful shots of Paul Dano farting.
Yes.
Like where you're just like, what is going on? But yeah, it's I'm just like immensely proud of it, and I think there's nothing else like it, and I think that's something to be celebrated.
No, absolutely. I think it's quite a challenge for you and Paul, you know, this film, in terms of, you know, your what you've got to work with at the beginning of the movie.
It's more challenging for Paul. He had to, you know, act across just getting nothing back from me. But yeah, I mean, it was a challenge to a certain extent, this part, but it was also, a friend of mine said something to me that was immensely helpful because I was really stressing out about it. And then he was like, you realize that, like, you're playing something that this, you know, this isn't a real thing. Mm. This doesn't exist. You can do what you like. As long as you're sort of consistent and committed, there is no wrong answer to how to play a magical dead guy. You just have to find what it is.
That's a great line to say out loud as well.
Yeah, there is no wrong way to play a magical dead guy. yeah. So, you know, I'm very grateful to that friend for sort of chilling me out about it a bit.
How did you decide on, you know, like the starting look for Manny? Because you've got this great sort of like eye half open sort of...
Yeah, that was just something that I was like, I was, one of the things I was worried about was like, okay, how do I make him seem dead all the time? Like, even when he starts coming back to life and talking, how do I differentiate him from, you know, just a normal talking person, and also not make him just like a normal sort of zombie we've sort of used to seeing?
Yeah.
And so I just sort of, yeah, I mean, I literally was like standing in the mirror or filming myself on my iPhone, making weird faces. And I have like, I think I, this eye like is very, very slightly lazy anyway, this eyelid. And I, like, I always notice it if I ever take a selfie on an iPhone, I like have to try and take it 10 times. Cause like, if I want to like send it to my girlfriend or something throughout the day or something, like I'm sending, we're sending other photos or something, it's, like, I cannot take a good one because my eye always looks like a little bit closed, and it's just, it's something I've always I thought that everyone could do that with their eye, and then I took one video where I was like playing around with voices and face stuff and like sent it to the Daniels, and I was like, there's this eye thing, and I showed it to them, our makeup artist, when I got there, Jason, and he was like, yeah, that's great, please do that, and in his words, people will think I did it, and then. And it was a huge relief, actually, like, because the first time that Jason did the full-on makeup and I looked at myself and I did the eye thing as well, it was like, okay, I look really dead. I don't have to worry about, like, evoking deadness all the time in every line or in everything. Like, I can just play the character and let sort of the look speak for itself, which was, yeah, that was definitely, like, a moment of sort of relief, I suppose, and it made the... And then I could just sort of... start concentrating on creating this really sort of cheerful, sweet dead person.
Absolutely. It must be a fun challenge.
Yeah, no, it was incredible. Like, this film was probably the most fun film I've ever made. Like, I mean, the majority of everything I've ever done has been incredibly fun. So, like, and this film was just, it was off the charts.
Now, some people may have seen a version of your character around London and in other cinemas, and they had it in the States as well.
Yeah.
What's it like having that dummy, or that Manny dummy, going around?
I think it's great. Like, I think it's quite sweet, and it is very funny, and it's super creepy, and it's a great little weird marketing thing. Like, I had this other thing. You know, there's an app. There's like a Swiss Army Knife app, and if you play with the app long enough, it like tells you to text a number, and then if you text the number, Manny starts talking to you.
God.
And he starts like asking you questions like he asks in the film, and he'll send you little images and stuff. I was in rehearsals for a play, and I'd been texting, so I was like, okay, I'll try this. And then I was like, my phone was going off in rehearsals, and I was getting like a string of texts from my character asking me like what sex is, and like, well, and I was like having to text Manny and being like, shut up, Manny. I feel like everything A24 have done to... Sorry to draw your like nice question about the dummy into a question about the marketing of the film, but I do think there's something to be like, I've again made like quite a few independent films, and just seeing the kind of energy and the creativity that went into like them doing crazy weird, because it's a crazy weird movie, so it
Absolutely.
Should have some crazy weird marketing.
It makes sense. And, it's kind of a joy, I think, for a marketeer to get a film like this.
I disagree with
okay.
you. I think most of them hate. I think 1 in 10, it's a joy, and we managed to find that one. I think a lot of people go, "How the hell do we market this?" Unfortunately.
And on that note, we're about to go into a Q&A for Swiss Army, which is very exciting.
Yes. Yeah.
We've got a packed audience next door. We could probably hear a bit of the film through the microphone,
possibly, or maybe a bit of the Magnificent Seven. We're
it
not
sounds
sure.
Great,
it does. It sounds very bassy. It sounds it'd be good in 4D.
But thank you so much for talking to us.
No,
and,
no worries.
And yeah, fingers crossed for the film. We're really pleased to be releasing it in the UK.
Awesome.
And,
well, and thank you for doing that, and thank you for having me.
Thank you very much.
No,
cheers.
Cheers, man. Thank you.
You have been listening to the Picture House Podcast, a Picture House's production brought to you by Picture House Cinemas. We would like to thank everyone who works at Picture House Cinemas and everyone who has ever attended a screening of a film at a Picture House cinema. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.